apple tree, the few that survived the rains and frost, shot with late afternoon sun. They glow a deep orange gold against a blue so sheer, a single bird would rip it like silk. You may have to break your heart, but it isn't nothing to know even one moment alive. The sound of an oar in an oarlock, or a ruminant animal tearing grass, the smell of grated ginger, the ruby neon of the liquor store sign, warm socks. You remember your mother, her precision, a ceremony, as she gathered the white cotton, slipped it over your toes, drew up the heel, turned the cuff. A breath can uncoil as you walk across your own muddy yard, the Big Deep Dipper pouring night down over you, and everything you dread, all you can't bear, dissolves, and like a needle slipped into your vein, the sudden rush of the world. When I first started taking classes with Ellen, that's when I first started writing again. She did classes called Writing About Our Lives for Women. And I was on my way to social work school. I had gotten in. I was going to get an MSW at the University of San Diego. I had quit the idea of medical school. I had spent the last 3 years taking pre-med courses, so that I could go to medical school, because I hadn't taken any of those courses in college, and I hated it, except for having affairs with my organic chemistry teacher and my regular inorganic chemistry teacher, who I really, really liked a lot. They liked me enough to not fail me, because I didn't know what the hell I was doing in chemistry with all these tiny little organic chemistry molecules. but actually, my organic chemistry teacher and his wife are the ones who asked me to live with them when I had gained 80 pounds and I didn't know what I was doing at all. I was a wreck, total wreck. And I felt like I was never going to find what I loved in my entire life, because I had tried to do everything I thought I wanted to do. And I hated it. And so I turned to food, gained 80 pounds, was the biggest I ever was, didn't have a place to live, didn't have a way to make money, because I'd been going to school the whole time. And then Harry and Sue asked me if I wanted to come and live with them in their son Rob's room. He was away off at college or somewhere. And they had a two-year-old daughter, Rachel. And they asked me to be her nanny. And I could live in exchange. I could live in Rob's room. I remember his room so well, in exchange for being Rachel's nanny. And I said an immediate yes. They were so kind. They cooked dinner, meatloaf and mashed potatoes and peas at nighttime, and I took care of Rachel and took Ellen's classes, which she let me have for a nominal fee, although I did have to sign something, a sheet with her saying I was going to pay whatever that nominal fee was, whether I lost an arm, a leg, my child died, my parent died, I was in a car accident. I mean, I had to sign my entire life away to agree that I was going to pay this no matter what, and that whether I quit after the first class. But my point is, a as soon as I started writing, I knew I was never going to do anything else. Even though they ripped my writing apart. Oh, it was terrible. But I loved it so much that I quit. I withdrew my application or my withdrawal within the first month that I was taking Ellen's class. And I told many of you, my dad said to me, "What makes you think you can be a writer?" And I said, "I want to." And he said, "Well, you know, people have submitted Charles Dickens' work anonymously to publishers and it got turned down. What makes you think you're better than Charles Dickens?" And I said, "Nothing, except that I love it and I'm going to do it." So that I credit, of course, my own persistence and my own recognition of what I love. And Ellen's encouragement, although she never really thought I was a very good writer, which I have taunted her with, since I am the only one in all of her classes that has ever gotten anything. Not in those classes. Of course, she's gone on to teach very illuminated and illustrious writers. But in those first couple of years, and our group met for 3 or 4 years, I was the only one in that whole group that ever got anything published. And she didn't think I was a great writer. She thought there were a lot better writers in that class than me. And there probably were. But they didn't keep going. And I did. And that is, I don't think that's the moral of the story, but I think the moral of the story is you do what you love. You do what you feel passionate about. And you don't listen to other people who say you can't. So, that's Ellen's poem. And thank goodness for Ellen, is what I have to say. Okay, we're going to do a visualization. Actually, it's not a visualization, it's a meditation that I've done with some of you many years ago. Then we're going to the lay of the land this afternoon. Is going to do this. And then we're going to talk about the reality you see is the one you believe to be real and true. And what it takes to disengage from what you believe to be real and true. And then we're going to take, hopefully, there'll be some time after that for questions, because I know that some of you probably have questions. And some of you who have been doing the six steps for, well, I've been teaching it in these groups now for 3 years. And for some of you, it's the first time or the second time. But as you can tell from that piece that I read to you this morning, it takes a while. It takes going around the spiral a couple of times. Many times, sometimes. It takes many times. You know, the conclusion that I came upon this morning, when I wrote that piece, was so deep and so kind of shocking that I had never, ever come upon that level of neglect that I felt as a kid. I had never named that. Mary, could you put on a mask? That's okay. So it's an unearthing process, but at the same time, it's a process of scales falling away. And you become more and more who you are without your conditioning, who you are without the multiple beliefs you have about who you are. So let's do a meditation first, and then we'll speak about the process of you don't see the world as it is, you see the world as you are. So, feel the sensation in your body. Notice warmth. Feel yourself really here. I am here. Notice warmth, coolness, tingling, numbness, anything. Wide open field here. And now open your energy field and ask that any energies that aren't yours are returned to wherever and whomever they belong to. This is like opening your hands to release the end of all filaments of energy so that it goes back to where it came from. And then ask that all people, places, and things that are holding your energies open and take all of your energy back. So this is like everyone else opening their hands so your energy filaments come back to you like a measuring tape retracting in its case. And so if you were hovering above the top of your head looking down at yourself, your physical body appears as the bullseye of a target with your energy field in perfect concentric circles around your physical body. And so we ask that it be perfectly balanced around your physical body from front to back, side to side, top to bottom, and inside to outside. Now imagine, if you will, a band of dark blue energy outlining your energy field to protect and contain your energy. Like dipping an Easter egg into a vat of dark blue dye. When your field is contained, you have a buffer to filter out energies coming into your field. Relax. You have a container for your own essence. It's very easy to remember who you are when you're being yourself. Now imagine a grounding cord like a hose dropping from your tailbone deep into the earth. And let go of anything you're ready to let go of into the earth. And open your feet and allow a flood of earth energy to come up through your legs, filling your body and overflowing out the top of your head. Earth energy is what sustains our physical body and life vitality. And then open the crown of your head and receive a flood of sun or spirit energy coming down through your body and overflowing out your feet. This is the energy of guidance and protection. experience the circulation of these two energies in vertical alignment as a column of light that supports, nurtures, guides, and protects you. And now focus on your heart, and if you feel to, you can put your index finger and your middle finger on that heart point. Allow, if you sense them near, feelings of love and joy. Allow yourself to feel that. And you can picture, if you want, a two-way flow of love, of sweetness, of gratitude, as a bridge flowing 360 degrees from your heart to the world and back to you. And notice as you're swimming in a field of your own energy, your own true nature, if it's easy to feel who you are and what you need. When you're radiating your essence outward, and this is what we've been talking about the last couple of days, the people, places, and things that resonate and serve you are drawn to that energy. You become the source of your own protection. And just sitting with yourself and feeling that. And notice if doing this has allowed your attention particle, so to speak, to come back to you, to return to you. It's so easy to have them go outward. And then slowly come back to the room and to this moment. This is a sweet or loving thing to do. Yourself, when you feel kind of that there's a lot of your energy out there, your attention particles are out there, a good balance. We used to talk about this a lot, but haven't talked about it recently, is an 80-20 balance. 80% of your energy here, with yourself, 20% out on the out there. But all of this, even all of this, as lovely as it is, and it is lovely, and it's a wonderful thing to do daily, as well as the forgiveness meditation that we did yesterday. That's another lovely thing to do, particularly if you have anger or resentment towards somebody and or towards yourself. But I want to talk about the shift, I want to talk about the shift that we're making here and the radical nature of it, the high barness of it. So, we're going to be working with today, this afternoon, an event, a defining event of your life, but I'm going to give you an example of what I mean by that. So if I would think about what are some defining kind of traumatic events. I mean, there are defining events like when I met Matt, or when I decided to go to India, or when I moved into a group grope that I lived in Buffalo, or when the group grope and I, meaning another couple and my boyfriend Lee and I, all lived together and switched partners every Monday. And we in the group grope went to visit my mother and Dick, who were, were they recently married? I don't know. I was maybe around 25. And we went to visit, we were living in Buffalo. Lee and I went to Buffalo for the weekend to visit this couple we met while we were backpacking in Glacier National Park. That was the last time I went backpacking. I haven't really been since then. But we went to visit David and Kathy. We met them while we were backpacking. And they lived in Buffalo. And we went for the weekend and ended up staying 2 years. And that was that. Those were the days you did that. And one of the weekends of the 2 years, we went to visit my mother and Dick, and smoked a lot of dope with them. They were very into smoking dope. And I could talk about that event. I could talk about sitting there in the den smoking grass with my mother and Dick and David and Kathy and Lee, and then going into the kitchen and binging on Haagen-Dazs vanilla ice cream. That was really fun. I remember that. Or descending to the basement and having sex in the cedar closet beneath my grandmother's mink coat. I could also talk about that. That was a very fun, defining event. Really fun. But that isn't where I get caught. So if I think about an event that there's only one way to look at it from, which is the way that I look at it from. If I pick a couple of them, but I'll pick one of them, it was the day my mother, I was 11, and it was the day my mother told me she was divorcing my father, and a lot of you have heard about this, and I wrote about this in this book, because this is a book about my mother and me and food. And when I went into her room and she said, your father and I are getting divorced, and I started crying. What's going to happen to me? Where am I going to go? She got furious at me and told me to go to my room. And that all I ever thought about was myself. And she hadn't told my father yet. And I proceeded to eat a lot of frozen Milky Ways after that, that afternoon. Now, it seems like there's really only one way to look at that. What a shit my mother was. She told me she was getting divorced before she told my father she was getting divorced. She got mad at me when I got upset that she was getting divorced, called me selfish, told me to go to my room. However, here's the big however, and I want you to be thinking about, in a moment, I'll ask you to think about something parallel in your life. There is another, at least a couple other ways to look at it. The main way to look at it is, if I hadn't come into that event with my mother with the belief that I was bad, that I was damaged, that I was selfish already. So I walked into that with a view of myself. I started to cry, got really freaked out about what was going to happen to my brother and me. Had I felt clear or been another kind of kid or just not felt the conditioning of being damaged and bad, it's possible. What else is possible that could have happened? Let me ask you. So we're turning the kaleidoscope here. Same colors, same event. That's what we're talking about. Same colors, same event. What else? And with a whole nother view, a whole nother perspective, what else would have been possible? Cheryl? Right, but what would have been true about me? Yes, that is another way. I could have, I mean, had I had some confidence, I could have said, oh, does this mean we're going to live in a different house? Does this mean we're going to have a different kind of adventure? Does this mean I'm going to have pretty things in another house? Does this, but it wouldn't have been as viewed, so appears. I wouldn't have been looking through, I'm damaged, I'm bad. My mother wouldn't have responded the way she did. You're damaged, you're bad, you're selfish. A whole nother movie would have happened. Lauren? Yeah. I might have. But it's not about what I would be feeling for her. I just want to say this very, because yes, it's true, I might have, but not if I wasn't feeling that for myself. You don't get, it's fake, it's false, and it's a lie to just be oozing with compassion for someone else when you don't have any for yourself. There's no well to draw it from. I mean, I can see an animal on the street and feel a lot of love for or compassion for or want to rescue that animal, drawing on some love I already feel. It doesn't come from nowhere. So yes, I could have had compassion for my mother, but not if I felt like I wasn't going to be safe, not if I felt like it meant my whole world was going to be coming apart. So to change how you look at things requires changing how you feel about yourself. That's it. There's no other way here. There's no other way. It's what I said to you yesterday about Matt and I leaving with Blanche and the fleas and all of that. Well, what was true for me, if I strung that all the way back to what I believed about life and being alive, everything is hard. I never get it right. It never works out for me. I'm damaged. Something is wrong. Something's always wrong. I'm always wrong. So what we're talking about is truly change, or I shouldn't say change, it's seeing through the lie on the fundamental level. On the screen through which you are looking at your entire life. Now, it's only been until, I would say just recently, where it occurred to me that the way what my mother did well, that there's another way to look at what happened. There's not just one way to see it. It's not just that parents need to speak to their spouses before they decide they're getting divorced, don't need to speak to their kids first, don't need to criticize their kids for telling them that they're bad and they're selfish and like that. It felt universally horrendous what she did. Until I realized it was me seeing it. This is such a tall order. This is so radical. But I keep saying this because I want to hear if it's going in, if you're understanding this, if you're getting it. Because if you're not, I want to know. Because the six steps is based on this. It's based on, it's about me. I'm triggered, and it's about me. It's the way that I am interpreting this that makes it the way it is. That's all it is. Before I go on and I ask you to do this, are there any questions? Annie?
Are you willing to share what you came up with as your different perspective once, like, you could see that where you were coming from was also the lie? So what else is possible?
What else would have been possible is, and, you know, of course, I used to say if my mother was a queen, I'd be a princess. So there, that's a fantasy. But let me just say that had I not been entranced in the belief of being wrong and damaged and selfish, my response could have been any number. What I said, oh, does this mean we're going to move? Does this mean, it wouldn't have meant much about my worth, about my safety, about being damaged. It just would have meant, oh, we're going to have a change of a life situation. In the same way as my friend who stopped talking to me when that whole thing happened and I looked and saw what was the lie that I was telling myself, it would have backtracked to 2 years before then when I would have told the truth that I was uncomfortable in that relationship. And I would have ended the relationship. It wouldn't have taken the drama of her not talking to me when I returned from radiation to get my attention. Somebody else? Another question? Yep.
Thank you. If you could have, in that moment, channeled Krishnamurti and said, I don't mind what happens, is that what you're talking about? If you could have been in that place of not minding what happened. Or is that skipping a step?
Yes and no.
And that's final.
And the reason is because as an 11-year-old, which is when that happened, if I had had confidence in myself, it would have been, oh. I mean, it still would have, I probably would have still had a reaction about, well, who am I going to live with? Where am I going to go? But there wouldn't have been the underlayer of terror about what it meant about me and my safety. Somebody else? Sue? And then Amit.
I'm a little stuck on the last piece of this. And I think you just clarified it when you said what it meant about your belief about yourself and safety. I had a similar experience when I was around 15, and I remember yelling out no and rejecting what I was being told, that my parents were divorcing. And the belief that I carry with today is like, they're like, things aren't safe. Things aren't what they seem. I thought everything was okay. And it's not trustworthy. Like, there's not terra firma. The rug could be pulled out at any time. And I think I can see how that thread carries in now, you know, where I don't trust with the solidity about, but I don't know how to connect that to myself. I'm at the world. It's scary, things might not be safe. So I'm getting a little caught up on how do I connect that back to the
It's all about conclusions.
About me. It's all about
conclusions.
Conclusion.
All of this comes down to basic beliefs you have about being alive, which are your conclusions. Mm-hmm. I'm not safe, I'm unworthy, I'm alone, I'm damaged. I'm not enough. That's why we do this work, because this work names the contact lenses through which you're looking at everything else. Because those conclusions are the beginning of this. That's why we do this work. And then seeing the conclusions and then understanding they're a lie. And the forgiveness and the kindness. You know, we have to have so much kindness for ourselves here, because this is a high bar. Because we're doing what nobody else or what very few people are doing. And it's not easy work, but it's gorgeous work. It's the difference, you know, it's like me asking ChatGPT to write a piece, and they come up with it, or it comes up with it, in probably 3 minutes. And I've been working on the same piece for 3 months. So it seemed like it was really easy for ChatGPT to do this. And it's not easy for me. Is that okay? It's the process of doing the work of questioning your conclusions over and over and over again, of allowing the triggers to be triggers and going through the six steps. It's about me. Amit, could you wait for the mic?
You answered my question. I wanted to ask, why are we doing this this exercise of thinking what could have been different, but it is to see how strong the conclusions are and how they change how we see reality.
Yes, thank you for that question, because here's what we were talking about a little bit yesterday, and I'll say this again before we break up into pairs and do the work ourselves. We've talked about presence. We've talked about essence. We've talked about, I don't use the language, the true self. Some people do. Dick Schwartz in Internal Family Systems uses self with a capital S. Small self, big self. Self. So I don't really talk about that as much as what happens when the conclusion falls away. Who's here? It's what I asked yesterday. What would you lose? Maybe I asked this to you, Rachel, I don't know, if you didn't believe the conclusion. If you dropped the character that you have accreted over the years of a lifetime. We have become a character, a self, a personality that we believe is us. I have aspects of my personality, you know, that are recognizable, that I recognize. Default places I go to, a kind of default crankiness that I feel, or grumpiness, or whatever, beliefs about who I am. When I look through the conclusion, remember, every judgment is self-judgment. I can't be away with anybody else that I'm not being to myself. I can't. Where would it come from? How would I even know? It comes from here, and I'm projecting it out there. When I question with utter kindness, some people call it loving kindness. A lot of the Buddhists call it loving kindness. There are loving kindness meditations that are beautiful. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be at ease. May I rest easy. When I drop my conclusions, what's left? What's left when you drop your conclusions about yourself? What's left? Have you ever felt happy for no reason? What does that happiness feel like? Anybody? Lauren?
Joy.
It feels like joy. What else?
I call it a white moment.
A white moment. What else?
Lightness.
It feels like lightness. What else?
Technicolor.
Technicolor. What else?
Shimmering light.
What?
Shimmering light.
Shimmering light. What else?
Peace.
Peace. Love.
Contentment.
Contentment.
Spaciousness.
Spaciousness.
Freedom.
Ah. I forgot that was.
It's okay, Kathy.
Love. Love, peace, joy, contentment, ease, faith,
clarity. Mm-hmm.
Allowing. So you all have just described the qualities of being, of essence, of presence. You all have just described those. Ease, clarity, joy, love, contentment, light, shimmering. So you already know that. You already know who and what you are without the conditioned self. But it's the shitty-assed, ugly-faced baby again. It's how attached we are to our wounds. We are so attached to who we take ourselves to be. It's our covering. It's our costume. It's our character. We've been playing a role in a play for our whole lives. The problem is that when we get home, we don't take off the costume and we don't get out of character. Don't you want to get out of character? Aren't you ready to get out of character? This is what we're talking about. That's all we're talking about. We're talking about knowing on a moment-to-moment basis the ease, the joy, the clarity, the peace, the shimmering, the light, the rainbow. We're talking about that. That's it. That's all. It's nothing esoteric. There's nothing spiritual about it. I mean, that is what a lot of spiritual teachings are about. But it's who we actually are. And the thing is, you already know that. It's what's always been here. How you know anything is because you know that. You are the awareness in which all things arise. You are aware of that. Okay, so let's do an exercise now. So I'd like you to close your eyes. You know what? Divide into pairs first. So you already have. Actually, I think it would be helpful, more helpful to do this in a group of four. So you could hear from other people. So divide in a group of four right now, please. Okay, so please sit down in your circle of four. Please just sit down. Whatever it is, sit down. It's all good. Doesn't matter. If you're in a group of five, you're in a group of five. If you're in a group of four, you're in a group of four. Doesn't really matter. Is Jessica in your group? Yeah. How many groups of five are there? Two groups of five. Okay. So if you're in a group of five, you just need to divide the time up a little differently. But it's okay. So put both of your feet on the floor. Feel your butt in the chair. feel your feet on the floor. And become aware of your body, of any sensations in your body. And allow what's ever there to be there. And a way to bring yourself present, I said this yesterday, I'll say it again, and probably many more times, as a practice, is pretend you just arrived here. No past, no future. And the other thing I would say, just to help you arrive in a place of being present, which is on the way to being that joy, clarity, light, shimmering, peace, which you all already know, another shortcut that you can say to yourself is, be how you want to feel and feel how you want to be. Or be what you know you are already. Forget the middleman. Now I'd like you to consider, bring up an event from your past that sticks in your heart, that sticks in your mind, that was challenging, difficult. Something that happened. In which your response was some degree of pain. It was a triggering event. So it's a trigger. And first we'll go through the six steps with your regular response. So notice the trigger, notice the event. What happened? Where you were? Who said what? This is an event which you've held for all these years in a particular way. Like I held the event with my mother and the divorce conversation, where it seemed apparent to you that the other person was wrong and you were the victim. Yeah, the person was wrong and you were the victim. What was the trigger? What was the event? And then the next step in the six steps is, it's about me. This is another one of these sticking places, because it seems in the moment that it's about them. What they did. It seems so apparent in our memory of it that they were off. They did it wrong. They should have done it another way. Had they known better, had they known how to treat people, they would have done it another way. Period. There was a right way to do it, and this wasn't the way. They did it wrong. Now notice, just right there, this is not the six steps. Because when we believe that, we believe it's about them. It's about them, how they did it. And often we do the six steps like this, on one level. So the event happens, it's about me, and we interpret this to mean it's about my feelings and my conclusion. So let's go through that. So it's about me, meaning it's about my feeling. What was your feeling about this event? How did you feel? Did you feel hurt, angry, sad, frustrated, enraged, neglected, abandoned, rejected? Shocked? Is there another time that you can remember in the past feeling that exact same way? Abandoned, hurt, rejected, alone, hopeless, powerless, despairing, betrayed. And what's the conclusion that you came to? Notice the conclusion. I'm unworthy. I'm not enough. I'm not safe. I'm selfish. I'm damaged. I'm doomed. Now, in this first take of the event, of the six steps and this event, in this first go through, notice that conclusion, and as if you were looking at yourself through the eyes of love, saying to yourself, sweetheart, that was a lie. This is not the adult you speaking to the child you. This is love itself speaking to you. There was no way you could be unworthy, not enough, damaged, doomed. The kindness of seeing that it was a lie the sweetness of the love. And now rewinding the tape, going back to this very same event, this very same event. What's the event? So it's the same event, the trigger. The next step of the six steps, it's about me. Right here, right now, as the third step, as if you were love itself. Joy, peace. As if this event was absolutely for you, not against you. For you, not against you. As if nothing was wrong at all. You are looking at this event. It's the change of the kaleidoscope. You're looking at it from another perspective. As viewed, so appears. So you're looking at it, feeling it, being with it from the perspective of clarity, of wholeness, of love, of peace, of joy. What do you feel? Do you feel that clarity? What do you see? When you are this, when you've changed perspective, when you're there as your radiance, yourself, when you are how you want to feel, be how you want to feel how you want to be, but more than that, be how you know you are. You are what you know. You are what you feel as joy, as love. How does this event look? What is your response? This might be a stretch if you feel confused, befuddled. I can't do this. That's okay too. That's another conclusion, but that's okay. You're asking a lot of your sweet self right now. You're asking a lot. So do as much as you can. Stretch to the point where you can. What's it like to see this same event? As who you know you are when you're not that shitty-assed, ugly-faced baby. When you're not your character. When you're not looking through the eyes of your wound, focus on yourself, not on your partner, eyes closed. Keep your attention particles in you. This is not about anybody else's experience. I know what I'm asking is a stretch. Might be uncomfortable. That's okay. Just another minute or two. Do you have any conclusions when you're in this place of clarity or peace or light or love? When you're not your character, who are you? When you're not your character, when you're not seeing through your conditioning, what do you see? What do you see? When you be how you want to feel how you want to be, what is that? Who are you? Can you feel the sweetness, the clarity, or even the lack of suffering of this? And if not, that's okay too. And then slowly, very slowly, coming back to the room. And when you have a sense of being back, open your eyes. So I want to say again, and we're just about to go around, and each of you will have 4 minutes to talk about this. That I understand that this is a radical shift, that we see the reality we believe to be real and true. That there's not an objective reality that everybody would see. We see what we believe. It's not that we believe what we see. It's that we see what we believe. Which is such good news. Because that means when you change what you see, or you change what you believe, your world utterly transforms. And it's not dependent on what anybody else is saying or doing. You're not dependent on external circumstances for your well-being. As long as you believe that you are, you're at risk. Okay. 4 minutes, please. You'll go around. Okay. I lost track of time. I thought we had till 6:30, but it was 6 o'clock. which it is now after. So it's really because I'm having such a good time. Because what better thing is there to do than this? That's what I say a lot. What better thing is there to do than see clearly, know who you are, have the scales drop away, be peace, be clarity, be joy, but just be happiness itself, which you actually already are, except that it's occluded by what you believe to be true about yourself, about your conclusions. Isn't that good news? I mean, am I the only one who thinks that's good news? Are you thrilled about this? Are you just kind of lost? Like, what the hell is she talking about here? What is she talking about? So I would like to hear from one or two of you, and then I'd like to do something else to end. Yes, you know, let me hear from somebody who hasn't spoken yet. I would love to hear from somebody who hasn't actually talked. Is there anybody who hasn't talked? Yes.
I have been listening to you, and I read a little bit in one of your books about this place that you describe, this luminescence, this clarity, and I've been confused about it, like what is it and how do you get there, and I don't understand, but this exercise helped me to realize that it's actually a place that I've been in therapy for about 3 years, and part of what I've been learning to do is to detach from the destructive person in my life and to not take the things that they do as my stuff, but let them keep their own, and to be able to be okay myself around that, and that gives me the freedom, has been giving me the freedom to be able to respond objectively in those situations. And I had this realization that it's the same thing.
Good. That's great.
I'm so excited.
That's great. Thank you. Somebody else?
No. Thank you, Janine. So you wrote in one of your books, make space for the room that exists between the hurt and who you are. And at that point, I had never even known anything but the hurt. And there was truly an opening when I read that. And so when you did the visualization with the bullseye, and that space just continues to get bigger and bigger, you know, I go back with the six steps and work through some of those really tough hurts and not misunderstandings, but not understanding why
right.
It's happening. And
yes,
having that space available for her just makes all the difference.
It does. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Okay, Heidi, what did you want to say? Who had their hands up? Heidi, why don't you give it to Annie, then I'll come to Heidi, since you're already back there, and then we'll come to Heidi.
I think mine's pretty short. I just want to say that was so much fun. And I see the possibility of going back in those defining moments and rewriting the story.
Yes, beautiful. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that fabulous? To me, that's worth the price of admission. You know, to even in my own life, to see that event with my mother and the divorce and all of that, to see that the story I tell myself is actually not the story, it's only a story. It's possible to just change it. See the kaleidoscope differently. Heidi, yes.
So I could just use a suggestion. So I was molested, and I'm really having a heck of a time seeing it a different way. So I don't know. I don't know how else to see it, I guess.
Might have to work on that a little bit more. Yep. Not good to do that kind of let me give you a suggestion part. You could see it from a fly on the wall's perspective. You could see it from if you saw it with rose-colored glasses. You could see it that way. You could see it from the perspective of humor. You could just totally change the lens. Or you could see it as if you were a time-lapse camera and you were just panning. Just panning. But there was no emotional investment or response to it. A time-lapse camera. Like that. A time-lapse camera. Kathy.
This was really powerful for me because I get stuck in the capital T trauma memories. And so to be able to come to the place of understanding the betrayal and the terror, and then to also see that I was very brave and that I spoke in a situation that had me so terrified. And so just seeing how back-to-back that is. And so I couldn't be that 15-year-old when I was seeing that I was brave. But then I can bring that back, thread that through the time lapse of like, yes, you are brave. You spoke when it was terrifying.
Yes.
So that breaks my conclusion of being to blame, being betrayed, and being in terror.
Yes. Good. So I want to say again, it's not what happened. It's not what happened. It's not that you were molested. It's not that you were abused. It's not that I was abused and molested. It's how I interpreted being abused. It's my interpretation of it that stays with me. I told you this morning, Friedrich Nietzsche said, there are no facts. No facts. There are only interpretations. It's not that what happened didn't happen. So let me be clear about that. I'm not actually saying there's no out there. There is. It happened. And still, it's your interpretation of what happened that stays with you, that forms the conclusion, that is the lens through which you end up seeing. In my own life, I've held on to my mother doing what she did. I'm 73. And this happened when I was 11, so let's just say 60 years. I believed and have gotten angry every time I think about that story. But I've gotten angry from the perspective of feeling like a victim and going into it believing already that I was damaged and I was bad. And so when I heard that news, it came in through the lens of being damaged and bad. It was already there for it to land. How it landed. Yes, Kate.
I thought of a really good visual that helps me conceptualize it. If you ever are watching a scary movie, a romantic movie, a funny movie, and you turn off the music, you realize how much you're influenced and sort of psychologically, influenced by the music. And it's sort of like if you were, like the trigger is sort of like someone playing that song again, like provoking that same emotion in you. And it really, like if you were to play like reggae over a scary scene, like it would totally change the vibe. Like that's my way of trying to understand it in a very less personal but still like visual way.
Thanks, Kate. Yeah. Somebody else? Okay. Yes, Amit.
Just because it was about speaking, my exercise, so I will speak. The event I chose was about something in my childhood where I didn't speak up. And it was really interesting to see how just speaking up, just saying, my mom lied to me that I lied, or something very kind of gaslighting, which obviously I didn't know the word back then. Yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to say it out loud, how amazingly it can change. I understand how already, I always saw it as like this event that shaped my life, but I understand how already I had a vision of myself.
Yes.
As a damaged, insecure, liar, bad girl who, you know, and it's still with me.
Yeah. So it's very good to see that and good to question that conclusion. Okay, so we're going to end, but first, before we end, I would like everybody, I'd like to hear from everybody a sentence about where you are right now. A sentence. Where are you, Wendy? I'm learning. Yes.
I'm getting a step closer.
Uh huh.
I think I've got it.
Free.
Present and peaceful.
Present and peaceful. Did you say open to?
New ideas.
Open to new ideas. All right. Shedding my old character.
Heidi?
Hopeful.
I'm really happy to be here.
Happy to be here.
I have a work in process.
Work in process, yes. Open, happy heart.
Hopeful.
Doing
deep work.
Cindy? Peaceful and interested. Sue?
Exhausted. That I
Elisa?
Great sense of love and relief.
Great sense of love and relief. Marlena?
The obstacle is the way.
That's, I think I've told you all about Marcus Aurelius. What stands in the way is the way. Yes, beautiful. Excited. Can see a path forward. Grateful and optimistic. Jessica? Yes, beautiful. Trish?
I feel like with the success, I got my money's worth.
You got your money's worth.
With success, like, the success gives me the sense that I got my money's worth. Like you said earlier today, like, there's nothing better.
Right. Good. Okay. How are you, Rachel? How's that wounded conclusion doing?
I'm excited that I came up with a response to my mother, even after the group. When suddenly it occurred to me, oh, you know, this is what I could have said. And the whole thing would have been different.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I feel lighter.
Good. Mary. Yes, right.
I'm feeling a lot of love and open-hearted.
Good. Kathy?
I'm feeling the strength of my own love.
I'm feeling drained and confused.
Drained and confused. Okay, so we have room for everything. Yeah. And I, you know, as I said before, this is a high bar, this work. And you're doing beautiful work. Beautiful. And I understand that it's not easy. And I understand that what I'm asking and what this work asks is that you turn toward that which you considered unbearable. So you're turning towards that which we pressed down as kids because it was then unbearable. Now, of course, what was unbearable as a child is different now that we're adults. However, until we update the program, we're still acting as if it's unbearable. And it no longer is. Because as all of you, or most of you said, I don't know if it's all of you said, that when you consider who you are without the program, without the wound, without the personality or the character, if you walk out of the play in which you're playing the character of your life, and you walk out of the theater and you leave the character behind, who are you? All of you answered that question today. Good for you. Okay, then. I'll see you tomorrow morning at 9:45.